How do you do? Alcoholism is a liquid tollway to oblivion. In spite of the camaraderie of fellow travelers, the alcoholic knows the toll is high, few places to exit, frequent breakdowns, and a bondage to liquor that seems unbreakable. The man in this story passed through every phase of alcoholism, ignoring all the signs. But he found the way out when his heart and mind and life were unshackled. From the old lighthouse in Chicago, this is Unshackled. True life stories of real people whose lives were turned around, dramatized and produced by Pacific Garden Mission. Even before 1877, George and Sarah Clark wanted to help people who were down and out. But that's the year they opened a little storefront mission in the heart of Chicago's Skid Row. From their own resources, they paid the rent, played the music that drew in the destitute, and welcomed them with love. And the doors have never closed since that first day 122 years ago. Today, Pacific Garden Mission still receives no tax dollars and continues to depend on the support of those who believe in sharing God's love. And today, the mission has grown to include many diverse ways of reaching the lost around the world, as well as sheltering more than 500 people a night, giving them food, clean clothing, and a safe place to sleep. The one who gave George and Sarah Clark the desire to help others has said, "Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." And now for broadcast around the earth, here's program number 2543 in the series Unshackled, the program that makes you face yourself and think.
Okay, last call for alcohol.
I'll have another. And I swear, you can hold more booze than anyone I know. You must have two all the way.
I had a friend in high school who had cases of beer that covered half of their basement.
Man, is that how you got started?
No, but it helped to keep me going. My dad let me stick my fingers in the head of his beer and lick the foam off when I was just a little tight. When I got bigger, he would pour an inch or two in a glass and let me drink it.
You and your dad are pretty tight, huh?
Yep, he's a great dad. Wife ever give you a hard time about drinking?
All the time.
She thinks the money should be spent on her and the apartment.
Well, you want to keep her happy, don't you?
Not if you cut out drinking.
Hey, barkeep.
Yeah. The women are all gone. Where'd they go?
Well, most of them took cabs home a long time ago.
My girlfriend has my car key. She took my car.
I'll take you home.
You in any shape to drive?
I can drive. I just can't walk.
There you have a snapshot of one phase of drinking, but there are many others, and the man in our story would like to share every aspect, from the first taste to the last bitter drop. He's telling his story now to help others avoid the tragedy he brought to his family and to himself. This is the first part of two in the true story of Kenneth Burbank, right now on Unshackled.
I was born in 1933, the oldest of three children, the only son, the only grandson, so I was spoiled rotten by my folks and my grandparents, who lived about two blocks away. I spent many wonderful days with my grandfather, who ruled his house. I grew up in Endicott, New York, 15 miles from Pennsylvania. Dad didn't attend church, but he sent Mom and us every Sunday. He worked for IBM, and we spent a lot of time together, hunting and fishing. He wasn't an alcoholic, but he enjoyed his beer. I had an endless supply of alcohol, thanks to Dad's business contacts. Mother, she didn't let me drink, but never would oppose my Dad's decisions. So I helped myself whenever I felt like it. By the time I graduated from high school, I had a strong taste for alcohol. I never dated then, too busy hunting and fishing. I finished a two-year college program before I was drafted in 1953. By then, I was dating a girl I'll call Linnea. We were married after a short courtship, and she joined me 8 months later at Fort Benning. But drinking with my buddies was first priority.
So what do you think of that white lightning, Kent?
I see how it got its name. That stuff is potent.
You can't drink it straight. You have to cut it 4 to 1 with water.
I bet the hangover is awesome.
Oh, Air of the Dog will fix that.
I thought I transferred from airborne to infantry, but here I am free fall.
You want me to drive?
Nah. Just because I'm seeing double, don't you worry none.
Huh? Oh, I'm not worried. No, sirree. Hey, let's go fishing tomorrow afternoon.
Well, sounds good to me, partner. We'll just pack us a cooler of beer and have us a good old time.
Your wife won't object?
I rule my house, just like my granddaddy and my dad.
Hey, look out!
I wrapped my shiny blue car around a Georgia pine, my first accident, and we both walked away badly bruised. I didn't see any connection between the twisted metal and my twisted habits, and I carried on. A daughter was born to us just before I was honorably discharged in 1955. We moved back home to New York, where I got a job as an apprentice tool and die maker at IBM. I worked with single guys, younger than I, and a couple of nights a week, we hit the bars.
Who's that girl you were dancing with, Ken?
You know, I already forgot her name, but any friend of whiskey is a friend of mine.
You mind if I dance with her?
Go ahead. She's not my girl. I dance, but I don't mess around. I'm married, you know.
You are. Well, could have fooled me.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, it's my dad. What are you doing here?
Ken, I've been looking everywhere for you. You should be home with Linnea.
What's up, Dad?
She's in labor, that's what. And you sit here with your heels locked around a bar stool. Get yourself home and take her to the hospital.
Yes, sir.
Your mother's right. You're throwing your life away on booze.
My first son, Scott, was born that night in late spring 1958. I was so proud to have a son. I celebrated with the guys, hardly spending any time with my family. My wife complained, as usual, but I kept drinking. As I neared the end of my apprenticeship, I was loaned out to work in a development lab. That's where I met Norm.
Morning, Ken.
How can you be so cheerful, Norm?
Oh, it's my relationship with Jesus, Ken. You hung over again?
Yeah, but it's worth it.
Ken, let me read you something from the Bible. It's in Proverbs chapter 23. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last, it biteth like a serpent, and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things.
Now look, I'm not interested in the Bible, Norm. My mother dragged me to church every week when I was growing up. I had enough to last me a lifetime.
But not enough to last eternity.
Say what?
Jesus offers us freedom from sin and eternal life.
Thanks, but no thanks.
I'm praying for you, Ken. Think about what I read.
Praying for me. Like I need prayer. In the fall of 1958, I went to work on second shift and soon assembled a new crew of drinking buddies. Vacation would come and my wife would visit her family while I went fishing in Canada with friends. As we partied with girls there, I never let on that I was married.
Boy, there was some party you guys had Friday night. Did you and Ron ever find his car?
Oh, did we ever. It was parked in front of his girlfriend's house, and she wouldn't let us in. He called her from a payphone and got so mad, he started beating the phone with the receiver.
Oh, you should have seen him.
I can see it now.
Some cops came by and arrested us.
You're joking.
Oh, I wish. He'd have thought we were bank robbers or something. They even called for backup.
Yeah, why?
Well, he told me to turn around and I wouldn't do it. He had a nightstick and I was afraid he'd whack us. So they hauled us away and we spent the night in the pokey.
You went to jail? What was it like?
Well, first they booked you. Public intoxication. Then they take your necktie, belt, and all your other personal things.
This is hard to believe. Going to jail just because you had a few drinks?
The cops were just throwing their weight around, that's all.
Well, you have to go to court?
Oh, we already did this morning. Pled guilty and got a suspended sentence.
Better hope the company doesn't find out.
Yeah, there was a decent cop in a paddy wagon. He warned us not to say where we worked for the newspapers we reported. So we lied. Said we worked for a construction company.
Hey, come on.
We construct things.
Come on, we better get back to work.
Hey, tonight, let's drive down to Pennsylvania. I know a great bar that stays open all night.
Try to stay out of trouble, Ken.
Ninety days straight, we drove down to Pennsylvania after work and drank until the sun rose, then went home. In May 1960, our third child was born, a daughter. I figured my wife would never leave me now, not with three kids. So I drank as much as ever and went on my usual trip to Canada in August. Three of us, all married, went to a movie with dates. That's how I met Linda, a school teacher who was a lady in every sense of the word. I went to see her the next day. Too bad about last night, Linda. I guess your friend was really mad when she found out my buddy was married, huh?
I called her this morning and she hung up on me.
Well, it wasn't your fault.
Oh, I don't blame her. It isn't right for a married man to run around on his wife. He should be home with his family.
Yeah. Would you like to go somewhere and have a drink?
No, I don't drink, Ken. I've seen what drinking has done to my family.
Well, I never had a problem with alcohol myself, but I've heard tales.
Oh, it's all true. Alcoholics are controlling and self-centered people. Well, their whole lives revolve around themselves and their drinking.
Well, one or two never hurt anybody, though.
As a teacher, I think I should set a good example.
You're right, Linda. You could teach me a few things. I should have told her I was married, but didn't. I made up some yarn about traveling around the country for my company and gave her a post office address. On Labor Day, I went back up to see her, and again, I didn't tell her I was married. For 3 months, we corresponded. In November, I finally drove to Canada and told her the truth. I lied to you, Linda. I'm married, and I have three children.
Oh, Ken. Oh, how could you have deceived me?
Well, I'm sorry, Linda. I didn't mean to hurt you, but I knew I had to set things straight.
What about your wife?
She'd be hurt, too, if she knew.
Oh, well, you better take me home.
I wish we could be friends. You're very special.
No, there's no future for us, Ken. You belong at home with your family. Don't write or call me ever again.
Winter came, and I went skiing with my buddies, leaving my family alone on weekends. Now my family was neglected winter and summer. We skied, but we also partied, since everything I did was centered around drinking. My wife gave up hope, and one night I came home to an empty house. She had taken the children and moved in with her parents 50 miles away. As I began losing everything I had, I drowned my sorrows in drink, even coming to work drunk.
In a moment, we'll learn where all this was to lead. Open doors for open hearts. That's the theme of our annual open house celebrating 122 years of continuous ministry to the needy, and you're our special guest. No group is too large or too small. As always, there's no charge for anything. Park free at All Right Parking, located three blocks west at the corner of Polk and Clark Streets. Shuttle vans will bring you right to the mission and to the Gospel League home for tours. So mark your calendar now to come to 646 South State Street in Chicago on Saturday, September 18th, from noon till 8 p.m. Now, if you've never been to the old lighthouse or haven't visited us for a while, this is a great time to visit. Take a guided tour of all the facilities led by our staff members or converts from our Bible program. And then be part of the audience as we produce an Unshackled program at 2 o'clock. And you'll see for yourself how these remarkable stories come to life and why Unshackled is the longest-running radio drama in the history of broadcasting. Light refreshments will be available all day with a dinner at 6 o'clock, directly after the praise and worship service. For more information, write to Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605, and visit our website at www.unshackled.org. Our email address is unshackled@pgm.org, and please include your address.
Ken, you're drunk, aren't you?
So what if I am?
Get in here before the boss sees you. Listen, what's going on? Are you trying to get fired?
I don't care anymore. I'm going to lose the house and everything.
You're not the first man to get divorced. You won't be the last. You'll survive.
Yeah, make support payments and mortgage payments, too.
Look, you stay in here out of sight and sleep it off. You understand? I'll see that nobody bothers you.
You're a real friend, Claude. A real friend.
Thanks. We'll talk later. No hope of reconciliation, then.
None. Last night I went up to talk to her, but it was a waste of time. Her mother didn't even want to be in the same room with her.
I can understand that, Ken.
Yeah. I expected them to send her back home with me to make a go of it, but no deal. Dad did most of the talking. He said she was living with them until I got my life under control.
Now, did you tell him not to hold his breath?
I told him there was no way I could make support payments and pay the mortgage, too. If we lose the house, it's all over.
It was already over. Our lawyers arranged for our divorce to be processed in Alabama, since in New York, adultery was the only grounds for divorce. So I flew to Alabama in May, established residency after 3 days, and our divorce was granted. I wrote to Linda and described everything that happened, asking if she would agree to see me. Then I drove up to Canada to see her.
I'm really sorry about the breakup, Ken. Is there any hope that you can get back together?
No. She's finished with me, and her parents are dead set against it, too.
Oh, I hope you'll spend time with your children. They need you.
I have visitation rights twice a month, but they live 50 miles away.
Make the effort. You'll be glad you did. Divorce is so hard on children.
I wouldn't know. My folks stayed together.
Mine, too. I always admired my grandmother and my mother for staying in their marriage, in spite of the problems and drinking.
Well, they were lucky men.
Grandmother always said, marriage is for keeps, for better or worse.
Linda's dad and I hit it off right from the beginning because he loved beer as much as I did. We polished off 5 cases every weekend I was there. Linda should have known what I was like from that alone, but we were married in October 1962. I was soon hitting the bars again, and my friends were all betting that our marriage wouldn't last 18 months. The next year, I went back on days, and there was Norm once again.
Ken, good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a while, Norm.
I often think of you. How is everything?
Yeah, up and down. I went through a divorce last year.
Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that, Ken.
It's history now. I'm married to a wonderful woman, a Canadian.
I'm still praying for you.
Beats me why you do that, Norm.
Because the Lord compels me to pray for you, Ken. Would you like to go to church with me this Sunday?
No, I'm going fishing.
Most non-drinkers avoided me like the plague, so I couldn't understand why he was so hung up on praying for me. I shrugged it off. Linda and I lived in an apartment then, so I could walk to work, stopping off at bars on the way home. Sometimes I didn't get home until the bars closed. Sometimes not at all. One Sunday afternoon, I drove down to Pennsylvania to my favorite bar.
Okay, folks. Last call for alcohol.
Hey, Charlie. I just put a $0.50 in that machine. I want to hear the rest of my songs.
Well, come back tomorrow and listen to them.
What kind of attitude is that? Give me my money back.
I said, come back tomorrow.
I'm not coming back tomorrow. Give me a bottle of beer to cover it.
No.
Cheapskate.
Here's a broom, Ken. Start sweeping it up.
Go pound salt.
Get out of here before I call the police, and don't you ever come back.
One time or another, I was banned from half a dozen bars. I passed out in bars, got into numerous fights, and used foul language. I got drunk at wedding receptions and made a fool of myself. My reputation was horrible, and when Linda had our first son, it didn't change anything. More than once, I came home covered with blood.
Oh, Ken, what happened to you?
I think I tangled with a steer wrestler, or maybe it was the steer.
Look at your eye. It's swollen completely shut. Let me put some ice on it.
Oh, actually, I was at Harold's place and I got into it with some bozo.
Here, let me wrap this in a towel.
He was being loud and I told him to pipe down.
Oh, sorry.
He asked me to step outside, so I did. I don't know what he hit me with, but he put my lights out good. When I came to, he was long gone.
How did you see to drive home?
I drive with one eye closed anyway, Linda. Otherwise, I see double.
Oh, Ken, it isn't worth it. Can't you see that?
Right now, I don't see anything, honey.
What are you going to tell your kids when you pick them up this weekend?
Well, maybe I'll skip this weekend. They've adjusted to Linnea's new husband real good.
No, Ken, no. You go. They need you. No stepfather can ever take your place.
Well, you're right again. I'll tell them what happened. Maybe they won't make the same mistake, huh?
Come on. We better get you to a doctor. This looks bad.
I missed several days of work that time, but I didn't learn. One night, my buddy pushed me through a set of double glass doors to keep me from fighting with a man who would have crippled me. Linda didn't drive, and sometimes when I didn't come home, she would put Kyle in a stroller and walk 2 miles to my favorite bar looking for me. I lost another pair of glasses last night. Left them somewhere. Oh, I swear I'd lose my mind if it wasn't bottled up.
It's bottled up all right, Ken. It's pickled.
Hey, look at that. Here comes Linda with my son. Why, hello, honey.
I was hoping to find you, Ken.
Hey, he's really growing.
Oh, 18 months. Let's see if he likes beer foam the way I did at that age, huh?
No, Ken, please don't. Don't. Will you drive us back home?
Well, you just got here.
No, let's go now while you can still drive.
Oh, Linda.
Please, it's a long walk back. All kinds of things go through your mind when you're left alone at night and your husband is out drinking. Has he been in an accident? Is he in trouble with the law? When you are married to an alcoholic, you anticipate the worst, and you are seldom disappointed. But Ken put a lot of money across the bar every week. Bills were always paid, and he never abused us. Our second son was born in 1964. I never doubted Ken's love for the children and me, and he also loved his work.
I'll get it. Hello?
Happy birthday, Ken.
Who is this?
It's Norm.
Oh, hello, Norm. Thanks. You never forget my birthday. I'm amazed.
Hey, I'm still praying for you, buddy. Remember that.
Man, you never do give up, do you?
Oh, God doesn't either. He's not willing that any should perish. He's always interested in you, Ken. God is using me to remind you of his love.
Yeah.
Hey, we did a good job on that last piece of test equipment, didn't we?
Well, you mean you did a good job. I made an impossible commitment, but you pushed it through.
Well, I think you're up for an award for meeting those delivery dates.
Now, you deserve the credit because I couldn't have done it without you.
Forget it. I'll see you at work.
I like that, Norm. He tackles things that seem impossible, though he's a little crazy.
Why?
He's always praying for me. I mean, is that weird or what?
Neither one of us realized how much we needed those prayers. When he wasn't getting injured in bar fights, Ken had narrow escapes driving the car while he was drunk. Are you all right, Ken?
I must have been dreaming. I thought I crashed the car.
Oh, you came in pretty late. I don't know, maybe you did.
Oh, my head hurts. I better look outside and see if everything's all right. Oh, man, it was no dream. Look at that car.
Oh, Ken!
Oh, I remember now. I hit a concrete abutment in the middle of a parking lot.
How did you do that?
Beats me. There was a streetlight on it. I should have been able to see it. I don't know how I hit it.
Oh, at least you weren't hurt.
Oh, you kidding? It's awful. The whole driver's side is ruined.
Ken wrecked 3 cars the first 10 years of our marriage. Are you wondering why I put up with it? I had grown up with a very godly grandmother who had a faith that never faltered. And even though Ken and I rarely went to church and never prayed or read the Bible, I had her example to follow. She and my mother had taught me that marriage was a lifelong commitment, for better or worse. I just didn't know that the worst was yet to come.
Next week, we'll bring you the extraordinary conclusion to Kenneth Burbank's story, a story of reconciliation and victory. Listening friend, you don't have to wait until then to learn the way out of darkness and despair. Even though your situation may seem hopeless, the Bible says nothing is impossible with God. Romans chapter 8, verse 32 says, "He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things?" Christ died for your sins to set you free from whatever is holding you in bondage. His blood alone has the power to set you free and wash away the guilt and the shame of sin. When you turn to Him, He forgives your past and gives you new life. "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved." That's according to Romans chapter 10, verse 13. Call on Him right now. If you need help in this crucial decision or to learn more about new life in Christ, get in touch with Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. The telephone number in Chicago is area 312-922-1462. Our email address is unshackled@pgm.org. And be sure to visit us on our website at www.unshackled.org. As your own life is changed by hearing these remarkable testimonies, share the joy by inviting others to listen, and remember to thank the manager of this station for bringing you Unshackled. This is program number 2,543. Heard in part one of the true story of Kenneth Burbank were Tom Geitsch, Lisa Keefe, Herb Graham, Jack Bivens, and David Stewart. Original music, Don Badorf. Sound, Nick Aloisio. Engineer, Ed Webb. Script by Kenitha Gabler. And I'm Bob O'Donnell. Unshackled is produced by Pacific Garden Mission to show through true stories that if your life is empty, it can be filled to overflowing. We produce these programs for you, so don't forget to write and tell us what Unshackled means to you. Our address is simply Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. Is life overwhelming? You may call Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago and talk with someone who cares. 312-922-1462. Someone is waiting for your call. 312-922-1462.